This is Talking Heads, and this hour on the programme, there's a general election coming up later this year, so between now and then, we're talking to the people who are planning to contest the seats in the House of Keys. On Talking Heads, we're chatting to people who've put the names forward to oppose the current members in each constituency. And today we're joined by Roger Gimbert, who's standing in Peel for September's poll. Good afternoon, Roger, and thanks for coming in today.
Good afternoon.
This is not the first time that you've stood for Keys.
No, this is my second.
You stood into 2006 as well. Yeah. And actually, you got fairly close, didn't you?
No, not really. I came third or last, depending how you want to phrase it. I got 321 votes. Hazel came second and Tim came first.
Oh, right. Oh, I thought you'd come second. I'll sack a researcher in that case. Okay. And so why stand again?
Well, I think that the same issues are actually before us. When I looked at my manifesto from 2006 till now, apart from one thing, which is Iris, pretty much all of it is still valid. And I think that we really do need to look at changing the way that we're doing things at the moment, because they're just not working.
All right, give me an idea of your background then, because a lot of people will recognise you because you've been a commissioner for some time in Peel now. But give us an idea of your background and how you got to this point.
Well, it goes back to probably about 2000, when I actually started looking into politics. And in 2004, I decided to stand for the commissioners. I tried to write letters to try and get things done before then, because I was not too happy with playgrounds and facilities for children in general. As it got nowhere, I decided that, you know, I'd actually stand for the commissioners and actually see if I could actually make the changes happen myself.
You feel that you need to be inside the system to change it?
Yeah. Well, it's the only way to do it. And I think that with, you know, an MHK, you know, you're actually on the inside where you can affect change, as long as you don't just join the grouping, if you like, and just, you know, take the easy life.
What, the one-party state by patronage?
Similar, yes.
And what about you yourself? Are you a Peel man through and through?
I'm actually from Onchan.
Onchan.
But I've been in Peel now for 14 years.
Right, OK. And so you stood in 2006 and you're standing again this time. Why would people vote for you in September? What do you think you've got as a USP that'll make people vote for you?
Well, I think that I'm very of the people. I'm always there to actually answer any queries, concerns. I try and help people the best I can. I think that, you know, what you need from your MHK is you need to have local issues looked at and also central issues looked at. Obviously, people have local issues like dog muck, which is the commissioner's remit, yeah. But they do actually have issues with parking. They have issues with the roads. Of course, we've got Iris and the regional Iris system for Peel, and that's going to be all local issues. And then centrally, you're going to be looking at, you know, whether or not there needs to be reform, how we're going to do taxation, how we're going to deal with the VAT, reciprocal health, and all the other things that the UK government and Europe are actually chucking back at us.
In terms of your background for the job of MHK, what sort of a career have you followed?
Well, politically, I've actually been a commissioner since 2004.
Outside of politics.
I look after property at the moment. My job at the moment is to do leases. I do commercial and residential property. I have 56 residential and 58 commercial properties to look after.
Yes.
Before that, I worked in purchasing for BA Connect. And whilst I was doing that, I was looking in and maintaining contracts, which had an inventory of over 20 million.
Okay. And you think that that's given you the skills that you need to be a good politician?
Well, I think that you need to be able to delve into the minute detail and actually find out what's actually wrong. And I'm very good at actually looking into problems and, I think, coming up with sensible solutions.
You said earlier on that you're not happy with this current government. Would you agree with David Cannon that it's the worst one in living memory?
Well, I can't go back as far as he can, of course, but I don't think that they've done the best they could have done. I'm not too happy with what they did over the reciprocal health. They just basically kept on saying on the radio and in the Keys and Tynwald that, you know, it can't be changed, it's a done deal. And then lo and behold, because of people power, it actually changes.
Do you think that that's what did it? Do you think it was people power that changed it, or do you think it was just a change in heart from the UK government?
I think it was down to the fact that it was a UK general election, and I think it was down to the four MHKs on the island who actually pushed it with the UK MPs and, of course, the people who actually contacted their friends and family in the UK, and Henry Ramage, of course, from the Diabetics Association, who've been really pushing to make sure now we actually keep this. And I think it's the pressure groups and the people who have actually made this happen. And luckily for us, it also happened at the time when there was a general election in the UK, which meant that they were more likely to listen to the people at that time.
What about the VAT bombshell? Because that came hard on the heels, really, of the health agreement, didn't it? Do you think the government could have done more there?
Of course.
Why?
Well, they just, again, rolled over and accepted it as a fait accompli. I have a bit of an issue with the fact that they don't seem to go down to London and actually fight our case very well. With the amount of money that we actually send down to London, I think that they should be more on our side and helpful against Europe with us, rather than just, you know, doing what Europe says.
And where do you lay the blame? Do you think that it's our politicians in the Isle of Man who could do more, or do you think that our representatives in the UK ought to be looking after our interests more? We are a crown dependency, aren't we?
Yes, we are. But I think that our people on the island didn't do as much as their predecessors would have actually done. I think we used to have a lot more closer working relationships with the UK proletarians. And I think that we've actually, you know, stepped back a bit from that. Yes, I know that we're going more, you know, towards independence and standing around 2 feet. But the thing is that they're also there, supposed to be working with us. It is supposed to be, you know, working together, not against each other. And at the moment, they seem to be working against us. And when they're looking for 100 million here, it's like 50 million there. That, to their particular budget, is minute.
Yeah.
But to us, it's 20%+.
Absolutely. So, I mean, you're a commissioner at the moment and you're talking about local issues. Can you not do enough as a commissioner? Is that why you want to stand for national government?
There's only so much you can do as a commissioner. It's one of those things that I've always said, that you need to actually work your way up. You know, obviously, if you've got problems with dog muck, you've got problems with social housing, there's certain things that you can do as a commissioner to try and actually rectify those particular issues. But when it comes to the bigger issues, you need to look at social services. You know, you need to look at provision of first-time buyers' houses. And, you know, you've got all these issues that suddenly become central issues. And one of the things that I found since I declared my intention to stand has actually been that I'm actually getting both local and central issues passed to me, and I'm trying to actually pass the local issues onto the commissioners.
You declared very early. You declared last September, didn't you?
Yes, I did. And that was because I wanted to talk to other potential candidates. And I spent 4 or 5 months doing that. And it worked very well. I learned
not just in Peel, around the
island. No, it's like it was candidates. I didn't actually speak to the other Peel candidates. I spoke to other candidates around the island. And, you know, it did actually open my eyes to quite a few issues, which, you know, if you think that there's a simple solution, there's usually reasons why that simple solution hasn't been acted on beforehand. And I was lucky enough to, you know, have some conversations with some current MHKs and some current ministers.
Well, I think it was covered in the news at the time that you were trying to get some sort of a loose coalition almost of people who were going to stand this time together and come up with common policies. Isn't that called a political party?
No. The thing is, we're all independents. All we've actually agreed to do is, if we get in, to actually work together for the betterment of the island. And I think that it is important that we actually, you know, stay independent, and that we actually, we're voted in by the people. The only people who will be telling me what to do are going to be the people.
All right, so it's not a political party,
no.
Then. It's just a group of people who think the same way. Mm-hmm. And is there a name for it?
No, because we are all independents. So, you know, they've looked at different possibilities of names, and, you know, we just decided that, you know, core policies are something that we looked at, and we've actually, you know, tried to actually run with some of the suggestions, and I've put them in the flyer that I put out earlier this year. And, of course, it is down to the people then to actually decide if those are the right policies.
But if you're an independent candidate, I don't see how you would need to talk to other people about what your policies are going to be. Isn't this just a way of getting other people's ideas?
No, because you've got to remember that if you don't get into government and you're not prepared to actually work with other people to get into government, then you're not going to get anything through, because one person isn't going to actually succeed. We've seen that time and again when one person has actually argued the case, and if they don't even get a seconder, it doesn't even get debated. So you've got to actually get to the stage where you have enough people in there to make a difference.
But if these people are all elected in September, then if some of them are offered departmental positions, won't they become part of the bloc vote anyway?
Well, this is it. You've got actually. I don't disagree with taking a departmental position. I think that you need to actually be in the system to be able to affect change. So staying out of the system isn't going to be beneficial. So, but what you do is they've actually set up in the last month it was actually Green and Timbal that they were going to set up the scrutiny committees. And I think those are a good way to actually spend time making certain that the oversight that we actually need is actually there.
What do you think about MHK's pay? Do you think that the basic pay is enough?
I think that the basic pay of $35,000 is probably enough. There's, another $6,000 on expenses?
Yeah, so it's $41,000 really, isn't it?
Expenses, I think, could be done a different way. I'd like to see, basically it's like a charge card where you actually get it actually put, the money put on the card and you swipe it and you use it, yeah. And it then gets audited and checked. And the other thing I think is that pensions should be contributing at the same rate as for civil servants.
And what about extra pay for being a departmental member or for sitting on committees? I mean, that's been in the news recently, hasn't it?
Well, again, what they were looking at with the scrutiny committees, they did actually say that should be the extra 30% as if you were a departmental member. They actually said that the extra 10% for the chairman is something that they haven't got the money for at this time. Yeah. But I do think that, you know, people need to be paid to actually do the job. The other option would be for everyone to be paid as if they were a departmental member and let them scrutinise without any additional income.
So you're saying that £41,000 a year isn't enough for somebody to be an MHK and work full-time at it?
Well, you've got to remember that I've just said that the expenses shouldn't really be classified as part of the income. They should be expenses towards the running of the, you know, being an MHK.
So more scrutiny of the expenses side of it, you think?
Yes.
Yeah. Okie dokie. What about local and national issues? If you are elected, where will you sit on that sort of divide? Because there's a split between being a good constituency MHK and also being a national politician, isn't there?
Yes. And the thing is, you've got to be careful that you don't spend all of your time as an MHK looking at local issues, because people will come to you with local issues. All you can do is work closely together with the local authority.
You were saying earlier that you tend to hand those things back to the commissioners now, or are you pointing people at the commissioners?
Well, at the moment, what I've done is I've had a few issues actually raised. So in the last month, the last sitting of the commissioners, I actually put in 5 notices of motion, which were all related to things that the people had come to me with. But I wanted it to put to the commissioners, and all 5, I think it's the first time, all 5 have actually been approved. So the issues that are actually being brought up are being actioned. But the thing is, going forward, they can't bring it all to me as an MHK candidate, because people are accusing me of electioneering based on the fact that I'm a commissioner. So what I'm trying to do is actually make certain that, you know, it is actually shared out between the other commissioners, and the commissioners take it forward if I'm lucky enough to be elected.
I suppose that you are doing electioneering. That's the job, isn't it? You're trying to get yourself elected.
Yeah, but the thing is, you can't use the commissioner side of things to
I appreciate,
to
yeah. Okay, September to go. And what are you doing at the moment to actually aid your efforts to get elected? Are you knocking on doors? Are you getting out and about? Are you publishing a website?
The website I was going to do, but Alex was going to do that for me, and since he passed away, I haven't really felt that it was suitable. So, yeah. No website.
No website.
I have put out a newsletter back in, started writing it back in January, and it ended out going out in April, outlining my first meeting, which I had on the 28th of April. And on there, I've actually outlined quite a few of my concerns. I've actually done it as local issues and also central issues, so that people can actually see where the divides are, because I think it's important that the people actually see that I'm there to fight local issues which are governed by national income. Mm-hmm. National issues that actually affect them as well.
Okay, okay, let's take a short break.
Election 2011 coverage on Manx Radio.
This is Talking Heads, and we're talking to Roger Gimbert, who's standing for election for the second time in Peel come September. We've talked about the difference between local and national issues. What do you think are the national issues that are most vexing to the Isle of Man at the moment?
I think it's going to be down to the economy. Make certain that we actually get enough money coming in to be able to keep all the services up to the current level. And the other thing that we need to be doing is, I don't agree with the government spending all of our reserves hand over fist, so I think that we need to reduce expenditure.
And how are you going to do that? Because the majority of the money that government spends goes on wages, doesn't it?
Pretty much. But, you know, this is where you need to sit down with the unions and with the staff and actually work out ways to actually make more efficiencies. It can be done, I think, without actually going down to compulsory redundancies. And I think that if we work closely with the staff and the unions, it can be done in a way, because I know that people have come to me and actually said that they've not been asked if there's a way to make savings. And there are ways to make savings when it comes down to prescription of drugs, sending people away for treatment and various other issues which we can actually do locally, and we can actually do it better, because if we actually have it where people are seen on the island, they have the emotional support of their family and friends on the island. If they're actually going away, then, you know, and the maximum they can take with them is one person, and, you know, that there's issues there that's, you know, in certain instances you need more than that.
In terms of making more money or saving more money, that's a tiny percentage of proportion, though, isn't it?
No, when you're looking at going away, you're talking about, I think we spend almost £9 million on UK surgeries. I think that when you start looking at how much we spend on prescription drugs, there is, you know, massive savings there. When you're looking at you know, the fact that we're using the reserves, we've just approved £39 million to spend on IRIS, we should be looking at ways to say, well, is this, you know, best value for money? Is there a better, cheaper, more efficient, more effective way of doing this? And that's where the scrutiny should come back into it.
Government would say that that's what they're doing, that they are talking to the unions, they are talking to the workforces about, they are trying to make it so that it's not compulsory redundancies, that it's natural wastage. They'd say they're doing all that already.
I think the unions would disagree with you.
OK, IRIS you mentioned just there. I know that that's one of your hobby horses, especially as far as Peel's concerned, isn't it?
Yes, it has been since 2007. And one of the things that I've got on the local issues is IRIS, because they want to put a regional treatment works in Peel. I've also got it as a central issue in the fact that they're actually spending an awful lot of money. For example, they've just approved this £39 million. And of that £39 million, £10 million is actually for a belt dryer. Now, they've taken that expenditure over 50 years. Now, the belt dryer's life expectancy maximum is 25 years. Mm-hmm. So would you buy a car and pay for it over 10 years when you plan to get rid of it after five?
Yeah.
Have they never heard of depreciation? And this is just one item. And when you actually look at the issue of pumping it all the way back to Mary Veg, the different costings that they've actually done to actually argue their case, I've actually had, you know, 300,000 here, 500,000 there, differences which actually show that it actually justifies their case.
I sometimes see stories like this, though, in the news, and hear comments like this from people who say it's ridiculous, they ought to know better than this. And I've come to the conclusion that unless you're actually inside that system, you can't know why those decisions are made. Transparency only goes so far, doesn't it? Would you not concede that point, that maybe there is a good answer for these things and you're just not aware of what it is?
Well, actually, I've seen the information, and since 2008, Peter Caron's been asking certain questions on behalf of Peel, and we've had Chris Robertshaw asking questions on behalf of Peel, and now we've had access to all of the reports going back to 2006, and on that it's like we've had the technical information which actually says how much it actually costs for each bit. Yeah. So we have actually been able to delve into the costings as much as the experts who've actually done these reports did. But one of the things that we've picked up on is also the fact that each report that's actually followed has actually compounded the errors that might have actually been made back in 99.
Right.
And the thing is that even the latest one done by AECOM actually has issues because of the fact they took the previous report and they weren't allowed to go back and actually see if there was a better way to do it. You've got to remember, it is down to the brief that the government actually gives the consultant to run with. And if they don't actually run with that particular brief, then they don't get the gig.
So you think that a lot of these consultants that we employ at vast amounts of money are there to just sort of rubber stamp departmental members' ideas, ministers' ideas?
Pretty much.
Which is obviously the wrong way of doing it.
Yes.
Do you think that there is any likelihood, though, of that changing, particularly in the next government?
Well, if I get my way, then yes. I do plan to actually challenge IRIS, and I will be asking for a complete review of IRIS. They've actually said that, you know, Peel in the West is not going to be looked at before 2014 when they'll do the next review. Yeah. And I think that we need to be looking in the run-up to that, to actually sitting down and actually finding if, you know, it is still best value for money. But I think they need to actually look further back. I know the Public Accounts Committee did a review, but they didn't actually look at all of the information, in my opinion. And they actually, you know, they don't have the technical expertise to go back. I don't know who actually provided their, information. But the thing is that from the report they actually made, there were no recommendations that were of any great benefit or actually showed any of the issues, which I can actually show you.
All right. I'm no economist, but it strikes me that government either needs to make more money or it needs to save more money.
You could do both.
You could do both? Yeah, maybe. And where would you do it? How would you do it? How would you make more money and how would you save more money? Where's the fat in the system?
Well, the fat in the system is where you actually trim, so that would be on the savings. The way to actually bring more money in is to look at other particular areas which you can improve on. And one of the things that I think we have an area which we can improve on is what I call niche tourism. And that's basically for the mountain bikers, the abseilers, the rock climbers and all that sort of thing.
We do that, don't we?
Yeah.
And that's where our advertising is.
But this is where we need to expand it.
More on advertising.
Well, I'm not saying spend more on advertising, but the fact that we need to expand the types of tourism that we actually do. There's pilgrim tourism. Do we actually promote the fact that we have a cathedral on the island well enough? St Patrick's Isle. Do we actually, make the best of what we actually have? We have plenty of assets on the island which seem to be underutilised. You know, we have a beautiful coastline. You know, we need to be, bringing people over and actually selling that to people. And if that means that we need to increase the advertising in national papers in the UK, more TV adverts and so on, that they need to actually be targeted at the right audiences. And we need to make certain that that's an improvement.
The problem that I see is that looking at the TV campaign that we've got, it was great at the time, two or three years ago when it first came out. Nowadays, you look at the TV ads for Wales or for Scotland, and they're very much like ours. It strikes me that we don't have many unique selling propositions as far as tourism is concerned.
Well, we do, and you've got to remember that we have the whole of the beauty of the Isle of Man to actually take into consideration.
Yeah, it's lovely, but Scotland's lovely, the Lake District's lovely, Wales is lovely.
Yeah, but the thing is that it's different as well, and people are now going for more local holidays. So I think it's important that, I wish we could find a way to make the steam packet prices cheaper. Maybe there's a way that we can actually work with them to get that down. Or maybe we need to look at what some people have said, is there a need to nationalise it? Personally, they've got £1 million asset, if you like, in the fact that they've got this user agreement. And they're actually using that to actually, up the prices.
Yeah, but you understand contracts. The fact is that the steam packet company's got a contract with the Isle of Man government. You can't just renege on that, can you? Government can't turn around and change that.
They don't have to actually look to renew it.
But it's there for another 25 years.
Well, that was a mistake that was made by the...
But it's not something that you're going to change in your administration if you get in.
Well, there has to be some ways. I think the contract needs to be reviewed. I haven't actually seen the contract, so I can't say if there is any break clauses. I would have thought that the Attorney General's office should have actually had a look at the contract, and I would have thought that they would actually made it more in our interest than what it appears to be.
You also talk, I think, in your manifesto about more people in the Isle of Man, more businesses being registered for VAT. Are you talking about just more non-VAT registered businesses being signed up to the scheme, or are you talking about people like Tesco having to be VAT registered in the Isle of Man?
Well, I think it all comes down to the fact that because the UK are looking to say that we should only get the VAT that we actually generate on the island, staying on the island, we need to actually have people proving that they're actually paying their VAT on the island. And that is why having Manx registered, Manx paid VAT, will actually make those figures more obvious. I think going forward, it will actually allow us to actually see how much we're actually generating on the island. We still have the issue of internet-based sales, and maybe there's a way to do it via the government website where you can actually buy it through there, which will actually track the VAT sales.
Use that as a portal almost. Yeah. So you are saying that Tesco, Boots, all these multinational companies ought to be VAT registered in the Isle of Man and paying VAT in the Isle of Man?
Yes, but at the moment the government are telling us that that's taken into consideration as part of our VAT sharing agreement. Now, going forward, if the government in the UK are actually saying that we should be only getting what we're actually generating, we need to actually prove how much we're generating and also benefiting the UK with what we're providing.
You also talk about relocating departments. Haven't we just gone through enough musical chairs in government of swapping department names and premises?
Well, I think that was a missed opportunity. They could have actually put more of the departments out into the various locations. They've actually got a budget for town regeneration, and yet they've actually done nothing to actually help that. The nearest they've actually done is the new DEFA building out in St John's. But there's no reason why the departments can't be put out around the various towns in the
but
island.
But what benefit is that for government? I mean, I can see it would benefit maybe the towns around the island, but what benefit would it be for government?
Well, there's a lot of people, for example, in Peel, live in Peel but work in Douglas. So there's an awful lot of congestion going towards Douglas. You'd be able to actually save on, travel costs and, the congestions that we get from that.
Bet there are more people that live in Douglas that wouldn't want to drive out to Peel, though.
Well, you had a similar problem with going up to Jerby for the prison officers. They didn't want to go because that was a relocation. It's one of those things that, it's something that can be done over time. And people actually spend money where they're working. And that's how you actually benefit the local economies and actually provide better opportunities for the businesses in the local areas.
We're almost out of time, but final question. What do you think about the public election of MLCs and the Chief Minister?
Yes and yes. I don't agree wholeheartedly with David Collister's recommendations with the 8 and 3, but I do think that there needs to be a mechanism for publicly elected MLCs, and I think Chief Minister needs to be publicly elected. There's been a few discussions with other people, other candidates, as to how to best do it, but my personal opinion would be that as it needs to be someone who's experienced, it should be a sitting MHK who's actually nominated by the outgoing house, and then the outgoing house candidates actually then get to be voted in on that at the next election.
Roger Gimbert, it's been lovely talking to you. Thank you very much for coming in today.
Thank you.